Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. This is the place to be. If you're interested in living a longer life, being healthier, preventing illnesses, or improving the conditions that you have, everything that I share with you comes from the Library of Medicine. That's the official repository of all the quality science that we believe should be used as the basis for making intelligent choices, reasonable choices. Now, what I have found is that there are tens of thousands, indeed hundreds of thousands of studies on nutrients like vitamin C and vitamin E and the B complex on how those nutrients can enhance your immune system and well-being and therefore be an important part of preventing disease. Because I shared on a recent program, a high number of people with breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and other conditions were deficient in nutrients such as zinc, selenium, and vitamin D3, easy to obtain either through natural sources like a plant-based diet or through proper and intelligent supplementation. And yet, unfortunately, the mainstream medical community does not rely upon that information. Instead, it relies upon what it's told from, more often than not, from pharmaceutical journals or journals that are supported by the pharmaceutical industry about the latest miracle drug. Well, okay, if there's a drug or medication or medical procedure that can extend our life, prevent disease, I'm all for it. But something we know from thousands of years, that there are natural substances that we could be taking on a regular basis. For example, this study's from Ohio State University. And it deals with Korean ginseng. It prevents oxidative stress caused by work. Now, just if you are not familiar with oxidative stress, when we go out to exercise, that's good, and we should. The younger we begin exercising, the more systematic our exercising, like exercising in the morning, you get a better condition within the body rather than exercising in the evening. Also, what happens when you exercise? They can help you live a longer life and lengthen your telomeres, the end cap proteins on your chromosomes, much like a shoelace. Those plastic caps on the end of a shoelace keep the shoelace from unraveling. When the DNA begins to unravel on the chromosomes, your life shortens. Hence, shorter telomeres, shorter lifespan. Longer telomeres, longer lifespan. So we focus upon what will cause telomeres to stay long and therefore provide you 5, 10, 20 years of extra life, quality life. Well, exercise is at the top of that list. Now, here's what else comes when you exercise. You increase the endorphins. These are the feel-good hormones that your brain secretes. And when you do about an hour worth of exercise, aerobic exercise in the morning, biking, jogging, power walking, swimming, you're going to feel better. Your mood will be better. You'll have a more positive disposition, probably for the next 6 hours. If, in addition to that, you realize that you're burning fat, and that fat is generally around the abdomen, the belly and the thighs, the buttocks, and when that is lowered, that's a good thing, because one thing that can cause you to gain a lot of weight, be obese, is that extra fat, and that shortens your lifespan, increases your risk of heart disease and stroke. You also are lowering your pulse rate. Now, every morning before you work out, you should take your pulse, gently touch, just right near, if you're watching me, just gently touch right there, the outside of your artery. And you'll feel a pulse, boom, boom, boom. Now, you should take that before you exercise. And why? Because when you exercise regularly, you can help lower that. Now, I had my pulse taken yesterday, my blood pressure taken yesterday by a medical doctor and an acupuncturist to do preventative acupuncture, which I highly recommend. It is one of the single best things you can do for pain, for your heart and regularity of the heartbeat, and for better nerve connectivity, especially people who might have some form of scar tissue. It's terrific. and it's not that expensive. But in any case, my pulse rate is what it should be, 50 beats per minute. Now, why is that important? Because the average American is closer to 75 to 80 beats per minute. Now, why is that really important? Because the more beats per minute, the shorter the lifespan of the heart. Why? Because all the organs of the body have biological clocks. And as a result, you could feel okay, your brain could be fine, but if you've been a smoker, both your lungs and your heart are going to be prematurely aged. If you've been sedentary and not exercised, that means that, well, your muscular system is going to be flabby. You'll have more fat. You'll lose the tensile strength you should have. You won't have the abs. You won't have the strength in your legs. And as you get older, it becomes more and more difficult to keep that muscle on your body. So you're going to live a shorter life. Your lungs will be shorter. Your heart will be shorter. So you see, we don't die all at once. It's not like every organ in the body just collapses. Heart, lungs, liver, kidneys, brain. It doesn't work that way. And whichever one has created the most oxidative stress has the most insults against this DNA. Now, just a little lesson in biochemistry. And by the way, I am a registered dietitian. I am a clinical nutritionist, board certified in my field, and I've counseled tens of thousands of people. I've done over 56 clinical studies, including published in peer-reviewed journals, invited by scientific conferences all over the world to present my research, and was senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and the head of the anti-aging department. So it's something that I know from a career of working in the field, that every single little thing you do right prevents the accumulation of what you do wrong. Years ago, there was a book, you probably heard about it. It was called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and Everything is Small Stuff, meaning doesn't matter what you do, it's all small stuff. So you have a hamburger, so you have French fries, so you yell and scream in an argument, so what? Now, the next day it's over, day begins new. Not true. Not true. Did you know that one single argument is enough to raise your blood pressure and cause micro strokes throughout the brain? Now, this isn't a major stroke. It's not going to cause you to suddenly feel pain across your shoulder, down your chest. Now your jaw starts to change, your lips change, your tongue can't focus on the way it should be to pronounce words. Your breathing is affected and you go paralyzed. No, we're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of tiny little stroke in the brain. And you can actually see them at autopsy. You can see these little tiny strokes versus the big strokes that we call dementia and Alzheimer's related, the amyloid beta plaque. So one argument, one screaming fit is enough to kill you. And how many people end up having a stroke at night after they've had an argument in the day? So we just adapt to our behavior or other people's behavior, including maladapting to bad behavior. We just tolerate it. But the body absorbs all that, and that hurts you. You shouldn't be someone's, you know, mat that they can wipe their feet on emotionally. No. There's a time to say no more and walk away to save your own life. Now, let's get back to oxidative stress. That causes massive oxidative stress. Arguing, insecurity, uncertainty, fear. You all have felt that sensation. We all do at some point when something goes wrong or we're anticipating something going wrong. Maybe you got a notion you're going to be audited by the IRS. You get that queasy sensation. You can feel it. Or you're feeling it because it's also your heart's involved. Stress can kill the heart. And you have more or less about, depending upon your body size, 50 to 75 trillion cells in your body. the latest science shows that those cells are altered about 10,000 times every 24 hours. That means that there's some damage done to them, and oxidative stress is the number one damage. Imagine then every time you have the wrong food, the wrong beverage, coffee, the wrong sugar beverages, the wrong carbonated beverages, the wrong, and then you have the pizzas, hamburgers, french fries, bagels, you have all the meat, the salami, all of that is wrong for the body. Now, maybe right for your culture, maybe right for your conditioning, your family habits. Oh, we're going to have a pizza tonight. It doesn't make it right because the majority of people do something wrong. So remember what I'm saying, please. Every small thing you do right means your cells are going to stay undamaged longer from oxidative stress, because oxidative stress creates the free radicals. The free radicals are what hit the cell and damage it. And then one time when you're younger, you can repair a lot of that damage. When you get older, no. So that's why where I grew up, I'm sure many of you grew up the same way, nobody ever changed. I mean, literally, no one changed anything outside of a high school or college. Everything was the same almost every day. It was predictable. Just one repetition. Just, oh, we're going to get up. We're going to have our morning and constitutional. We're going to have breakfast. We're going to go the same route to work. We're going to do the same work. We're going to come home. We're going to eat. We're going to converse or not, have dinner, watch the same television. But it's the same, at least for the older generations. Hence, no one ever got healthier the older they got. They might have gotten wiser, but not healthier. And no one lived a longer life because everyone smoked. Everyone drank, not to get drunk, social drinking. Everyone had junk food. Why? Because TV dinners were things. Do you remember those things? God, they were terrible. And you even had a TV dinner tray, those little aluminum trays that you fold up, and then your mom puts that thing in the microwave. It's self-dangerous, creating free radical damage to the food. And then you take the aluminum foil off, and you had some potatoes that didn't taste like homemade, home-cooked potatoes, and you had some kind of meat and vegetables. It all was just mush. Anyhow, but people would sit and watch television and eat. Well, that was not good. And then the fast food, eating out, that was not good. Now we eat the wrong food in and we eat the wrong food out. So I'm just sharing this with you as an extended version of our health and nutrition segment to show you that never confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. So stop all the negatives. Anything creates inflammation. The inflammation creates the free radicals and the oxidative stress then damage your cell. And then one day you hit 40 and something aches. Pain here, fatigue there. You don't have the same sense of body fluid movement. You don't have the same capacity for endurance, strength, stamina, balance, even your cognition. Did I forget? I just read something. I forgot what I read. And then it gets worse. But it can be reversed. But first you have to stop it before you can put it in reverse. And you do that by simply paying attention that if it creates oxidative stress, understand you must change that. Now, getting back to my main point, when you exercise, your heart rate comes down. That extends the life of your heart. You're getting better circulation to the microcirculatory system in your brain and into your extremities. That's important too. You're also strengthening your muscles. You're burning fat. You're creating feel-good hormones. You're getting better lung capacity. All that is to your advantage. Now just take these nutrients to compensate for the oxidative stress because you're also prematurely aging yourself. Here's the irony. It sounds like a contradiction. It is not. Exercise is vital to staying healthy. Exercise also causes you to age prematurely. If you doubt me, Why don't you take a look at some of the greatest athletes, track and field stars, marathon runners, about 20 years after their marathoning days are way over. And they're prematurely older because they overuse the cells in their body. And without producing the new cells, their body's no longer 40, it's 60. Now, having counseled some of the greatest athletes in history, I can tell you that really hits them like a ton of bricks. Let me give you one more example. When I was in New York City, every morning I would run around the reservoir, generally with a couple of friends. We would train together and race together. And we trained based upon the length of the race. Let's say we're doing a 20K, it's 12 miles. Then we would train about 15 miles. You always want to train a little longer than your race. But there was always a guy who was running 13 miles every day, 7 days a week, at the same six-minute pace. And he was always out there. Every day we would see him. Now, he ran not on the reservoir. He ran on a road right 15 feet below the reservoir. And we'd see him say hello. So one day I asked him, I said, "What are you training for?" He said, "Oh, I'm not training for anything." I said, "Why are you running 13 miles at a six-minute pace?" He said, "Well, my body loves it." I said, "Let me explain this. Your body may love that, but your body is prematurely aging because we should only be doing road work about 4 miles a day to keep optimally well, 4 miles a day." Okay? He shrugged it off. 5 years later, I'm going into Lincoln Center, and he's coming out. "Oh, Gary, good to see you." And I said, "How are you doing?" He said, "Oh, not good, not good." "Why?" "Well, my legs burned out." "How old are you?" "I'm 46. "What can you run a mile at now?" He said, "I can't." "You can't run a mile?" He said, "I can jog real slow, about a 10-minute mile. I can't do 2 miles. And I've gone to multiple doctors, and they just said that the cells, my DNA's just been prematurely damaged. It was like I was always racing a car, but never changing the oil, never resting it. I burned out. You were right. I should have listened. I didn't. And now I'm told that I'll never be able to run again." And yet there was no injury as such. It was he had prematurely aged his body. Keep that in mind. Because a lot of us, myself included, did too many marathons. I did over 84 marathons, over 600 races. I'm still racing. In fact, I'm racing in a few days. I'm going to try to set a new state record in my age group. In any case, just remember, don't overdo anything. Keep your life in balance. Do what you need to maintain health and reduce oxidative stress. Because all that exercise, massive DNA damage from oxidative stress. So what can you do? Do less distance, give yourself a break, rest 2 days a week, and then do proper stretching. Yoga helps with that. Vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, L-carnitine, L-carnosine, vitamin E, tocotrienols, magnesium with calcium, and cayenne. So if you take those nutrients before you go out in the morning and when you come back, you will have all the benefits of the exercise, but you will have trapped with those antioxidants, the free radicals from the oxidative stress. Hence, you get all the benefit of exercise and none of the limitation of oxidative stress. So in any case, getting back to the original study from Ohio State University, people who are stressed can find relief by taking Korean ginseng. A study published in the Journal of Medicinal Food has revealed that the Korean ginseng can help reduce stress mentally and physically. So that's important, all right? It's all natural. There are thousands of articles. In fact, going clear back almost 40 years, I was the person always called in to do the debates. I debated all over America on ABC Network and David Susskind's show, and because a lot of people were afraid to debate. They're afraid to, you know, looking bad. I didn't have a problem with that. So I debated hundreds of times. And in one of these debates, the issue was ginseng. So here's a doctor sitting across from me and saying that there's no benefit to ginseng. There's no scientific study supporting it. It's just one of these oriental things that seem a little exotic, but there's no benefit to it. And then the narrator turned to me and said, "And you say what?" I say, "Well, I don't really say anything. But I wanted to bring," and I held up, it was this, look where my hands are, a foot apart. I had 5,000, I repeat, 5,000 scientific references from the Academy of Science and Medicine in Japan, as well as in China. And indeed, we had not done the scientific research in the United States, but cultures, thriving cultures that had the best knowledge in the world of Oriental medicine, had proven in the best scientific way that this works. And so then it was, turning back to the doctor, "Did you know about it?" "I didn't know about this." That was the end of the debate. So you can say something doesn't exist until you prove that it does. Now then, to stay focused upon a belief that something doesn't work when we have proof that it does, well, the proof is what we should focus upon. So there are a lot of things in traditional Chinese medicine that work. And ginseng is one of them because it reduces cortisol levels and it reduces muscle damage. So one thing that you could do before you're exercising, if you feel stressed, take some ginseng. Now, from Boston Medical Center, when low-income families can meet their basic needs, children are healthier. A series of reports from five cities across the United States found that young children and their parents are healthier when they're able to afford basic needs. New research published in Children's Health Watch, which is in Boston, the Boston Medical Center, highlights the needs of policymakers to improve access to the effectiveness of programs that enable all families with low incomes to afford basic needs like food, shelter, utilities, medical care, and health care that they need. So they looked at 18,000 families of children under the age of four, and they found that that was the case. I remember once I was on WMCA, and I got a call from a person who was well known. Her name was Gloria Swanson. She was one of the founders of United Artists with Charlie Chaplin, D.W. Griffith. There was a Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks Sr. And she was one of the people who were at the beginning of the entire Hollywood movie-making phenomena. And here she was. When I met her, she said, "Can we meet? I want to go over some stuff with you." I said, "Fine." And she was a very petite person. She had white gloves on. And I said, "What are the gloves for?" She says, "To keep my skin healthy, young looking." And her skin was great. And she asked me, "Would you be willing to create a healthy vegan menu for some of the schools up in Harlem?" I said, "Sure." And because of her celebrity status and who she knew, we were able to get that done. And the key was creating healthy foods that were healthy, but gave some of the same mouthfeel, smell, and eye appeal of what they were used to eating. And it went over very well. And from there was a whole movement across the country. Alexander Schaus and others were trying to get into prisons. I got into to the Jersey State Prison, and we gave all the patients in one ward who had AIDS a healthy diet and a holistic protocol. None died. They all got healthier. And Schaus took the sugar and out of a prison system and fighting and violence decreased by 90%. So we were showing the food-mood connection. In any case, I believe that today, one of the things we could do with the money that we spend, instead of spending it on something that does not help humanity, is we should go into every poor neighborhood in America and have a healthy soup kitchen that is open from morning till night, and where people can have organic, healthy foods, plant-based diet, juices with probiotics and nutrients. You could get a nutrient shake. So this way, people who otherwise may not be able to afford this, or they may not even have a health food store or farmer's market in their neighborhood, would be able to get this stuff for free. Because this way, nobody would be deprived because of income from healthy eating, and especially the children. So if we were able to give all the poor children in America, and right now that's about 40 million poor children, and that's 16 million food disadvantaged children, meaning they're just not getting enough food to eat each day. And frequently what they do eat is not healthy, which contributes to childhood conditions. So think about how much better Americans would be in their health if we saw that their food needs were taken care of. We're a rich country. We could afford it. Just a thought. And finally, the Alliance for Natural Health and Queen Mary University found that vitamin D works as well as flu shots. New research shows that vitamin D helps prevent infection of the flu. But again, you have to be taking it on a daily basis. Most people don't. So I think that's very important. Now, if you took vitamin D3, which has well-documented antiviral capabilities for years, that's in the medical literature, and then you add vitamin C and quercetin into that, and you add Podiarco, echinacea, into that, then you've got a great combination of nutrients each day that could help you. Quercetin, vitamin C, vitamin D3, zinc, very important. All these are the superstars. Then the herbs also make a difference. That's the latest on health and healing. A little longer today. But at least if you understand the larger construct that I'm trying to share, that remember this again. Everything we do in life, from every thought we have, to everything we ingest, to the nature of our conversations, to where we live, where we work, the quality of our friendships, all of this matters. And the more of these you have in a positive, healthy, balanced way, the longer you're going to live, the less disease you will suffer from, and you'll have a much better way of helping yourself if you are diagnosed with a disease, if you're already strong in your immune system and positive in your resolve. Back in a moment, and by the way, we are, just so you know, a lot of people tune in to get the health and nutrition information because I've given more information to the general public on health and nutrition than any person in American history. Think about it for a second. Approaching 50,000 hours on the air, over 100 books, multiple dozens of bestsellers, and plus 3 massive hits on PBS, the most in their history up to that point, on how to live forever, get healthy now, and for women only. Plus 30 other smaller programs on PBS stations around the country, and over 100,000 people in workshops. So there's a lot of information shared. And this daily radio program, just on our sister station, WBAI, has been on for 46 years. 4 more years, if Pacifica lasts, and hopefully it will, and our beloved BAI will make a half a century. That's the longest-running non-commercial radio program in American history. I don't say that to brag. I just say it's just there's a lot of information that's been given to people. My hope is that people actually use it. The more this you use, the better it's going to be. So what we've done is this. We have taken hundreds of my discussions on health, just health, and we put them all together. If you go to PRN.live or GaryNall.com, you can see just that. So if you just want to get the best on health, you get it every day. And if you don't want the information on the environment or commentaries or conversations with remarkable minds or hard-hitting investigative reporting, that's fine, because I also have that. But that comes after the break. Thank you all for coming up today to be a part of this. We're going to take a break and come back with the rest of our program. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. We've switched from the video part of our program, which I've done every day this week, over just to the audio. And just want to say thank you to Miguel Gross, who wrote me this just now. Quote, "Hello, Gary. Wishing you all the best. I'm contacting you about forming a group with men and women that are with similar ways of thinking as you. They are loosely sharing information about health, economy, etc. The only difference is they speak Spanish, mostly, though most read English very well. I shared you the information with two of the channels, and they follow you now. So he wants to know, can we do something together? And the answer is, sure. Back in the 1980s, I was approached by one of the leaders within the Latino community. And as a result, I would go up to Spanish Harlem, I would go up to all the different Latino communities and do lectures and workshops and health support groups. In a period of about 3 or 4 years, at least 10,000 people's lives were changed for the better. And I hope that they would follow up with that. I don't know what's happened since. In any case, so yes. And by the way, I never mention it, but one of my books on health and diabetes specifically is in Spanish. And I have more books I'm going to translate into Spanish. So yes, I think it's time that we went into different communities and helped them get healthy, live a longer life. So yeah, I'll be getting back to you with some ideas. Now, I want to show you what we're going to do. First, we're going to hear from different topics today. For example, in a moment, we're going to hear about the anti-smartphone revolution. We all know about the smartphones. We know that they are a major part of a lot of young people's lives. And I intentionally don't have a smartphone. I've got one of those old-fashioned analog flip phones, and I want it that way. And I only turn it on once a week for 2 hours on a Saturday when I drive to the farmer's market in case there's some emergency. They have to get in touch with me at the animal sanctuary. They can. Otherwise, I don't use it at all. Then we're going to talk about the strange connections with Sam Bankman-Fried and his FTX, because now we're seeing a lot of things that remind us of Bernie Madoff. And also I read, whether it's true or not, I read it in one of the sports pages, that Tom Brady and his wife invested hundreds of millions of dollars, like 80% of their total fortune, into this deal. And whether that's true or not, I haven't been able to independently confirm. But that means he's wiped out. And when he retires from, you know, football, he'll have a whole new big gig, probably the largest in American history, as a color commentator on one of the networks. But we need to know more about his connections, because once you hear who he knows and why that's important, then there's just a whole circle. For example, the second largest donation person to the Democratic Party and candidates was this young 30-year-old. And he was donating since he was 29. He was worth about 20 different amounts. I've heard 17 trillion to 32 trillion, billion. And he was giving it second only to George Soros, to the Democrats. The Democrats, in turn, then, were giving massive amounts of money to Ukraine. Ukraine, it turns out, were investing billions of dollars, or a lot of money, into FTX, his company, Sam's company. So there's a whole circle of circulating this money. Who knew, right? And then also we have a documentary, a short segment of it, on the truth about ivermectin. This is important because, remember, Chuck Schumer yesterday said we have to have an amnesty and get all this behind us and go forward, lessons learned. No lessons have been learned, because who amongst all the people who lied to us has said that they lied to us? Who has apologized? How about nobody? So you want amnesty for crimes against humanity, where millions of people worldwide died, where at least 750,000 people in the United States would be alive today had they taken ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and zinc and vitamin C and D? No, you don't get away with that. Maybe you thought if you controlled everything, the media and all three branches of government, you could get away with it. But things have changed, and the American people are awakening. In fact, let me show you how awake the world is. One of the most respected mainstream orthodox cardiologists in the world lives in Great Britain. And he got his two vaccines, and he was a major promoter of the vaccines until he got side effects, and then he wasn't. This is just one voice, but a very important voice, speaking out where no one else in Great Britain has really spoken out. This is only 20 seconds long. Listen to what he has to say.
Double jabbed and being one of the first to take the Pfizer vaccine, I have, after several months critically appraising the data, reluctantly concluded that this vaccine is not completely safe and has unprecedented harms, which leads me to conclude that it needs to be suspended until all the raw data has been released.
Okay, that's him. Mind you, we're not talking about just a regular doctor. We're talking about someone who appears in the media all the time, who's invited to all these conferences. We had the most cited, scientifically cited, prestigious cardiologist in America say the same thing. We had the leading pathologist in the world in Canada say the same thing. So all these really important mainstream orthodox people, most of whom took the vaccines, now they're seeing the consequences, and they have the courage to speak out. So I commend them for speaking out. At the same time, there's only one person who is a state surgeon general who had the courage to speak out. I'm not going to play the clip now. We'll play it tomorrow. But they're making him out to be like, oh, but he's a surgeon general in Florida. Who cares? He's a nobody. Well, I looked into his background. First of all, if you believe that people's voices matter and they count, he's African American. Oh, and he has a medical degree from Harvard University. Ah, and he has a PhD from Harvard. And he's a tenured professor from UCLA. And he has got 4 National Institute of Research grants. And so he's a somebody. Yeah, he's a somebody. So the critics of Pacific and the rest of you have no credentials. You only have your opinion. Before you criticize someone who suggests we not have young people take the vaccine, that's what he said. My research compels me, as a research scientist, as well as a medical doctor, to say there is no benefit for taking this, and it's a great deal of damage. Same thing this gentleman just said. But instead of paying attention to someone who has earned the right through his merits and his research and his professorial teachings and his scientific studies to say, I've done my homework. This is a dangerous, dangerous protocol that we're on. They merely attack him in the media. Just want to share that. He'll be on tomorrow. So now we're going to go to this clip. This is about the fight against the smartphones. It's called the anti-smartphone revolution. You probably are not familiar with it, but young people are, and this is a good thing that they're fighting back finally.
The singer Selena Gomez was in an interview with Good Morning America. She had done something that most people have thought about doing, but never actually followed through with. The pop star had mentioned that she'd taken a break from the internet, not just for a week or a month, but 4.5 years. And she claimed that it changed her life.
It has changed my life completely. I am happier, I am more present. I connect more with people. It makes me feel normal.
I do personally know others that have done a similar thing. It seems like there's a change in the air. I don't know if you can feel it, but the internet can be an increasingly tiring place. Now, leaving the internet entirely is a bit extreme for most, but millions of young people are doing the next closest thing. They're ditching their smartphones for feature phones, also known as dumb phones. It's a movement that's being dubbed the dumb phone revolution.
You are watching Cold Fusion TV.
The era of the smartphone has brought us unparalleled convenience, connection, and entertainment in the palm of our hand. But since it was introduced in its true form in 2007 with the release of the iPhone and the subsequent rise of social media giants, it has become clear that there's also a downside. It's no secret that smartphones have hacked our brains. The typical phone user touches their device 2,617 times every day. Interestingly, half of all of those pickups happen within the first 3 minutes of the previous one. It's no longer just a habit, but a bodily function. On average, 3 hours is spent staring at a tiny screen. It affects people emotionally, from guilty time wasting to depression and isolation in young adults. On the other hand, there's the relentless spying by governments and tech companies. For every societal change, there's a subsequent pendulum swing in the opposite direction. And right now, there's a weak but growing underground movement of young people opting to put their smartphones aside for dumb phones instead. A device that can only do phone calls, text, and simple tasks is refreshing to them. According to the BBC, Google searches for the term dumb phone have jumped by 89% between 2018 and 2021. The global purchase of dumb phones hit 1 billion units last year. This compares to 1.4 billion smartphones sold last year, a decline of 12.5% versus 2020. A 2021 study by the accountancy group Deloitte said that 1 in 10 mobile users in the UK had a dumb phone. And among these is 17-year-old Robin West. She got rid of her smartphone over 2 years ago. Her current mobile cost her just £8. Plus, there's no monthly data bill to worry about. She tells the BBC she'll never buy another smartphone. Quote, "I'm happy with my brick. I don't think it limits me. I'm definitely more proactive. I didn't notice until I bought a brick phone how much a smartphone was taking over my life. I had a lot of social media apps on it, and I didn't get as much work done as I was always on my phone." Most of her friends couldn't wrap their heads around it. Quote, "Everyone thinks it's just a temporary thing. They're like, so when are you getting a smartphone? Are you getting one next week?" As small as this story is, it actually begs an interesting question. What if the essential need for a smartphone in the modern world is mostly an illusion? Everyone used to live just fine without one 15 years ago, and perhaps it's all just a modern anomaly. Shubham Agarwal, over at the publication Digital Trends, switched to a Nokia 8110, and he echoes this sentiment. Quote, "I felt hijacked by my smartphone and the companies behind it. Switching to a feature phone disabused me from the illusion that my life will come to a halt without my smartphone. It made me realize how insignificant most of what I do on my phone actually is." Some YouTubers also share their experience with using dumb phones.
"I can hardly believe this, but I have been using a dumb phone for 6 months, and I told myself I would stick with this phone for 30 days at least to see how it goes, and it's now been 6 months. But there's a lot of places I've noticed you have to scan a QR code in order to get service, and this phone obviously can't scan a QR code and, you know, open up a link or an app. They don't give menus anymore. Like, if you go to dine in the restaurant, they don't give you a menu. There's just a QR code on the table, and you're supposed to scan the QR code to read the menus. Usually I'm with someone who has a smartphone and can comment in it. Personally, it frustrates me because I'm choosing."
So you see, there is a movement against smartphones. And a lot of smartphones are virtually controlled by the major silicon platforms. And they're just harvesting data from people. It's one way of pushing back. Now, this is a little different because I'm going to play this, The Strange Connections, with Sam Bankman and FTX because of all the political connections and all the people who are mainstream corporatists who bought into this. And a lot of people are saying he is the new Bernie Madoff, but even with more political power than what Bernie Madoff has. Here's the clip.
Giving you a roadmap of the tangled web of connections from Silicon Valley to Washington, D.C., then all the way back to Sam Bankman-Fried's now-for-sale penthouse in the Bahamas. Then, at the end of the video, hopefully we can answer this very important question. Should investigations into criminal activity be executed by the very parties implicated in the crime itself? I told you in the last video that the FTX scandal boils down to this. A crypto exchange took customers' money and invested it into unknown assets. A incredibly damning write-up about the company was published. Then FTX's competitor, the CEO of Binance, decided to liquidate hundreds of millions of dollars worth of FTX's utility token, which signaled to other crypto investors to do the same. But when FTX's customers went to pull their money out of the exchange, there was no money. A fella at the center of it all is 30-year-old MIT graduate, Silicon Valley-born Sam Bankman-Fried, who was pretty much a nobody up until the time that Joe Biden announced his presidential campaign. Just 2 weeks later, the FTX exchange was launched, and it was an overnight success, making Sam a very rich guy. Sam's father, Joseph, a tax law professor at Stanford, helped Sam raise money from investors to get FTX off the ground. Some of the investors include BlackRock, Sequoia, SoftBank, and Tiger Global. After FTX became an overnight success, Sam became the second biggest donor to Biden's 2020 campaign. Before helping Sam with the financials, his dad was working on a new IRS tax filing system. Apparently, Pops is pretty well connected because back in 2016, Joseph drafted tax legislation for the outspokenly anti-cryptocurrency Senator Elizabeth Warren. And curiously, in response to the FTX collapse within the last few days, Warren has called for regulation of the industry. Sam's mom, Barbara Fried, is also a Stanford professor, and she's co-founder of Mind the Gap, a democratic political fundraising organization based in Silicon Valley led by Stanford employees. Sam's brother Gabe is founder of Guarding Against Pandemics, which advocates for public investments to prevent the next pandemic. Gabe was a legislative correspondent for the U.S. House of Representatives and an advisor to large political donors in the Democrat Party. In addition to lobbying and advising lawmakers on pandemics, Gabe's Guarding Against Pandemics group endorses candidates on both sides of the aisle who pledge to champion pandemic prevention. My concern here is when they are spending on both sides of the aisle is that they are specifically cherry-picking politicians regardless of party lines that, in this case, will do the most medical tyranny in the event of the next scamdemic. Not only was FTX a partner of the World Economic Forum, even though they've tried to scrub the evidence from their website in the aftermath, but Sam's aunt Linda Fried is a member of the World Economic Forum. Her day job is an epidemiologist and dean at Columbia, specializing in aging, and her husband is an expert in HIV/AIDS. Epidemiology, I should define, it's the branch of medicine which deals with the incidence, distribution, and possible control of diseases and other factors relating to health. So between Aunt Linda and brother Gabe with the virus shenanigans, it's giving me pause. It's giving me Vietnam-style PTSD flashbacks of Event 201 and ill-fitting purple sweaters in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So over at MIT, there's a fellow by the name of Glenn Ellison. He's the department head of economics and former boss of the Biden-appointed SEC head, Gary Gensler. Glenn is also father to Sam's girlfriend, Caroline Ellison, or the CEO of Alameda. FTX's head of ventures and commercial is Amy Wu, who used to work for the Clinton Foundation. FTX's policy and regulation head, Mark Wetjen, served as Obama's commodity futures trading commissioner. And it doesn't stop there. The general counsel of FTX, Wren Miller, had served as lead counsel to Gary Gensler at the Commodities Future Trading Commission. FTX's director of engineering, Nishad Singh, recently donated $1.1 million to Becca Balance's political campaign in Vermont, as well as $500,000 to the Democratic Party of Oregon. In total, it's been reported that Singh has spent around $8 million on pro-Democrat campaign contributions. And my point is, to summarize, all the high-level employees at FTX or Alameda had ties to the DNC, SEC, or Washington, D.C. But here's what's really weird. I can't find anything on FTX co-founder Gary Wang. There's three poor quality photos of him circulating, but not one interview or clip of him on the internet. His FTX profile picture on Sequoia Capital even has him turned away from the camera. Does he even exist at all? Most of the FTX contributions were to the Democrats, except for Ryan Salame, CEO of FTX Digital Markets, and his $23 million donation to the Republican Party, which is kind of nothing compared to the bags they've dropped and plan to drop on the DNC. But at the top, there is no red or blue, there's just one team, and it tells me they were looking for both parties to comply with what they had in store. Pandemic lockdowns and mandates, perhaps, or perhaps crypto regulation. It's apparent that Democrats definitely got more out of the deal since Ukraine partnered with FTX through the WF to receive donations. So since FTX makes money off of all of those transaction fees, all of the money funneling into Ukraine, FTX got a cut of. Then Sam turned around and gave a huge chunk of that to the Democrats, becoming the second largest donor behind George Soros. And reports were that FTX wanted to spend over $1 billion on the Democratic Party for 2024. By the way, Alex Bornikov, Deputy Minister of Digital Transformation of Ukraine, took to Twitter Monday night, and he officially denied the story about Ukraine's crypto fundraising effort. Quote, "A fundraising crypto foundation, Aid for Ukraine, used FTX official to convert crypto donations into fiat in March. Ukraine's gov never invested any funds into FTX. The whole narrative that Ukraine allegedly invested in FTX, who donated money to Democrats, is nonsense, frankly." End quote. But what did you expect him to say? Yeah, it's all true. Nana, nana, boo, boo. Sorry, pores. By the way, what oversight is there in these billion-dollar U.S. tax dollar aid packages to Ukraine? I'm guessing virtually none. On an even more disgusting note, CoinDesk reported that FTX's operations were run by Sam's inner circle of 10 roommates who all dated each other. They stole billions of dollars from their users and were having company-wide sex parties while doing so. One participant of these parties allegedly might have been New York Times writer David Yaff Bellamy, who wrote a fluff piece on Sam the scam artist this week and never once mentioned his donations to Democrats or Ukrainian money laundering. I say he might have been a participant because he tweeted about visiting Sam's penthouse in the past and bragged about encountering crypto-themed condoms. Gary Wang's hologram flickering in the corner probably witnessed the whole thing go down. Caroline's supposed Tumblr blog, which was active from 2014 until this past week, detailed this sexual dynamic between the FTX staff, you know, the polyamory, saying that her ideal guy was one who controlled most major world governments. And she said crypto was mainly scams and memes. It's almost too perfect to be true. It's like the very fabric of reality is unraveling. By the way, CoinDesk will do an expose on 10 coworkers living in a weird harem penthouse doing booger sugar all day, ripping off their clients to the tune of billions. But the second one of CoinDesk's writers notices that all these folks have a common denominator, their TTs, Talmudic types, another acronym for your repertoire, he was fired. It very much looks like a case of Spook Family Robinson, a character set up to fail, most likely to bring in crypto regulation. So what do you think, internet friends? Should the people who are connected to this whole FTX fraud be the ones investigating their own wrongdoing? How can the SEC be...
Okay, so just give you some all the insight that's occurring. And it was right in front of everyone and not a single negative article written about it. They don't know yet how much was stolen, but thus far, it's over $1.2 trillion has been erased from people engaging in all forms of the cryptocurrencies. I've said it over the years, I'll say it again. I would not invest a penny under any conditions in any form of cryptocurrency. There is nothing supporting it. There is nothing they produce. It is purely a bunch of coked up, in my metaphor, coked up idiots who think they can not have to work for a living, just make money off money. That's a gambler. Those are the people that spend half the day in front of a computer doing home gambling or go to Vegas. Remember, the house always wins. If the house didn't always win, by a substantial margin, there'd be no houses, just be winners. And so everybody loses except the people smart enough to figure out another way to manipulate the American mind. That's what all this is about. I predict that Bitcoins and all the rest are going to take a dive way down, probably around anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000. And it was as high as 69,000. All of it an illusion. There's nothing backing it up. Nothing. Much like the dollar. I'll get into the dollar in an upcoming program. I'm going to do a whole commentary for an hour on what I see the failings of the American economy to be and what we have to do to turn it around. However, I want to take a few minutes here if you'd like to call in and share your comments on any of the things that we have shared. Please do. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And just a few more things that I'll, while we're waiting to see if any calls come in, just want to share a few other things that are out there. Fauci's quote, this is from Epoch Times, Fauci's pandemic leaderships need to be investigated by Dr. Scott Atlas. Now, remember, Scott Atlas was the former White House COVID advisor, and he sees multiple reasons for an investigation into Dr. Anthony Fauci. And so that's important. So now the people on the inside who had to keep quiet for political reasons, you can't be on a, let's say you can't be on a national committee out of the White House and then criticize what is being done or anyone on that committee. Now the knives are out. So Scott Atlas is saying, yeah, investigate Anthony Fauci. And because there's a lot that what he did was done wrong. Quote, I personally am very skeptical that a political investigation, no matter who does it, is going to be done without politics, or if it's going to be perceived as non-political. I don't trust people in government at all. They don't deserve to be trusted, to be objective. End quote. That's a man who was at the top of the COVID paradigm. Now we know what he really thinks. Interesting. I'm going to ask if we have any calls, because we're coming right up to the end of the program. If we do, I'll take a call.
No callers, Gary.
No? Okay, we're running out of time, so I won't try to squeeze in a call. We have a whole lot of new information tomorrow, including a mass exodus of doctors and nurses may lead to a collapse of the U.S. medical system. Be a commentary from Brian Shohavy, and that is tomorrow. Quote, real quick, I'm a practicing ER nurse for 25 years. The amount of blood clots, strokes, cardiac events like myocarditis, pericarditis, Bell's palsy, shingles, etc. that I've seen since the vaccine rollout is more than I've ever seen in the past 23.5 years combined. I don't know how anyone can't be frightened by what we are seeing. When I try to discuss this with my coworkers, they turn their heads and look downcast, but we rarely speak. I think it's because, like me, they feel betrayed by following the narrative, but unlike me, they won't open their eyes and speak out. They're afraid for their careers and also are scared to death that their bodies are ticking time bombs because they've had the vaccine. It's easier to ignore than to acknowledge. Susan Pace, published on Medscape. Well, just remember, do not be angry. Do not be resentful for those who've been vaccinated. If anything now, be concerned because every one of them is at risk. And I'm working now with a group of physicians. I'm putting a lot of my own insight and scientific knowledge in to how, if people choose, how to lessen the negative impacts of these lipid streaks in the arteries that are killing people and of getting the negative impacts of vaccines out. I hope to have something to share with everyone in the next couple of weeks. Though you were criticized, condemned, You were marginalized and fired. You were attacked physically and verbally by everyone in the media and who had a forum, including the White House. Do not do the same. Do not go at that level. That's demeaning. That's demonstrably deprived. Let's take a higher spiritual level and wish them only the best and hope for their recovery. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.